The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, the DraftKings Network, DK Network, live from Bar Canada at the Deeds. Gil Alexander is Kelly Bidlin. Numbers game. How you doing, man? You good?
Doing well. How you doing?
I'm good. We're being serenaded by Aerosmith a little bit in the background. That's all right.
Yeah, but cool. This is one of the greatest soundtrack songs of any movie. Come on, man. This is from Armageddon.
Oh, it's in a lot of movies.
Yeah.
But maybe originally Armageddon.
And then
what's
his daughter, right? That's the actress?
Liv.
Yeah. Liv Tyler's in this, and it's the scene when she's like making out with Ben Affleck or something.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. We've done all we can do today.
Out.
Bidlin, out. We got a lot of baseball on the show. Mark Borchard will join us from undisclosed locations somewhere in the desert. Paul Sporer from Fangraphs to talk both ALCS and NLCS with us. Drew Dinsick on the NFL. I got some questions for Drew. And, of course, football from last night. First of all, let's start with the baseball games because we will get to Borchard and Sporer later. First, it was the American League Championship Series game number two yesterday, and Texas refuses to lose. They have won seven in a row to start the postseason. They take a 2-0 lead over the Astros in the best of seven American League Championship Series, and they do it on the strength of a four-run first. They actually had four base hits within the first 10 pitches from Framber Valdez, and the really maybe even worse than that was Framber Valdez's throwing error in the middle of all that. Robbie Grossman was up it. That throwing error, that is, scoring Marcus Semien to start the festivities for the Rangers. That four-run spot, eventually a 5-1 lead, was just a little too much for the Astros to overcome despite the heroics of Yordan Lamar Alvarez. I think his middle name is really Ruben, but you know what I mean.
I was just going to ask about Lamar.
5-4. You get the idea. 5-4. The Rangers win that game and, again, take the 2-0 lead in that series. Looks like they're going to go with Max Scherzer in Game 3, which we'll discuss with both Sporer and Borchard. And then the National League Championship Series started last night, and the Phillies just a barrage early against the Arizona Diamondbacks, and specifically Zach Gallen, home runs galore from the usual suspects in this ballgame to get the Phillies off to the start. It was a Schwarber solo shot on the game's very first pitch, or at least the first pitch from Gallen anyway. Top second, Harper gone on a first pitch solo shot. Bottom second. Later in that inning, Castellanos gone 3-0. Held on though, 5-0 lead. Eventually was 5-3, and so the Phillies run line bettors get home just barely at -1.5 +120 with the 5-3 win. So the Phillies, who have only lost one game this postseason, remember that one where the Braves furiously came back and then doubled up Harper on that great catch by Michael Harris in that game against the Braves. The Phillies off to a 1-0 lead in the best of seven National League Championship Series. So game two is tonight, and we'll discuss that with our baseball guests. Football last night, though, let's launch into this. Chargers and the Cowboys last night, which Kelly looked like at the very beginning of this game. All that I started with guessing lines yesterday where I'm like, oh, this product is not what it has been these last couple of weeks. These games are all very weird and low scoring and all that. This game started right out of the chute. You're like, okay, here we go. After a 3-and-out for Dallas, the Chargers matriculated down the field. There was a 26-yard punt return. Then they started at their own 42. Herbert to Eckler for 28. Then Herbert to Allen from 1 yard out. 7-0, less than 5 minutes in. Dallas comes back with a 75-yard drive. They convert a 4th-and-1. Then Dak Keeper from 18, his longest touchdown run of his career. 7-7, 6:21 left in the first quarter. You're like, oh, the over is going to soar here. Over betters have this right. Here's what happened after that. Chargers 3-and-out. Dallas punt. Chargers punt. Dallas 3-and-out. Chargers 3-and-out. Dallas 4th-and-1 at the Chargers 13 with 2:29 left in the second quarter. Dak stuffed on a tush push, or as we like to call it, the tuchus push. Again, only the Eagles have this perfected.
It really is incredible.
Then the Chargers punt, and then Dallas, and this is where the shenanigans begin, ladies and gentlemen. Dallas at the end of the first half, they settle for a Brandon Aubrey 33-yard field goal to make it 10-7. That was after they let 5 seconds run off the clock for no reason, preventing them from taking a shot at the end zone from the 14-yard line. Mike McCarthy, who had 2 timeouts in pocket, literally says to the ref, they have him you know, reading the lips. He's like, why are you stopping the clock? He literally says that to the ref. So Dallas, for whatever.
The ref's assuming you're going to be intelligent and take a timeout and take a shot at the end zone. That wasn't even the worst one. It was Gallup, right? Beforehand. There was like 45 seconds left. Gallup, I mean, this is the one I guess I'll give McCarthy a little. No, I'm not going to give him a break here. He goes out of bounds. They wind the clock, and it's right on the Dallas sideline. And they're like, there's 45 seconds left, and they just got into Chargers territory, and they don't call a timeout. Winding clock.
Joe Fortenbaugh had a tweet. I wish I had sent it to you, which was sort of like, he goes, that's it. This is the coaching matchup that will get me to stop watching football for good. That was his scar. Wait, it gets worse. If we focus on these kinds of things too early, we're never going to get through this. Second half, because the end is just fabulous. Chargers matriculate, 4th-and-1 on the Dallas 7. Then this is in the third quarter. Herbert rolls right, incomplete intended for Palmer. Dallas 3-and-out. Remember, this is still a 10-7 game. Chargers do get a Dicker 24-yard field goal. It's tied up at 10, 1:08 left in the third, a game that started out as if it was going to be a shootout. Fourth quarter, we're only at fourth quarter. Dallas first play, 3rd-and-11 at the Dallas 24. Dak avoids the rush, hits Pollard in stride. He gets spun around by Michael Davis and propelled forward 60 yards later. Asante Samuel Jr. brings him down. By the way, I don't think enough was made about this play. I'm not sure why Pollard decided to just, I'm going to run down the middle of the field so Asante Samuel can catch me. Maybe try to run away from him because he felt him too. He saw him.
Yep.
No one said a word. I don't know if that had bothered anybody else. Five plays later, Dak to Cooks from two out. 17-10 Dallas, 11-19 left. Then the Chargers, 1st-and-10 at their own 25. Herbert misses a wide-open Keenan Allen for would have been a touchdown, I think.
Yeah. He might have had to make one guy miss, maybe.
Maybe. Wasn't his first miss to Allen in the game. Chargers end up with a 2nd-and-24. They get a 23-yard pickup. Then a hold on Zion Johnson on 3rd-and-1. They have to punt. You can't make this up. So J.K. Scott punts. In case you missed it, these are the highlights you really need to know. Kevontae Turpin of Dallas fair catches it, but the Chargers' Jasir Taylor pushes Jalen Tolbert into him. Jalen Tolbert thinks it's a loose ball and it's a fair game for everybody. He touches it just before Amen Agbambiga recovers for the Chargers. Now, this was also because the referees were convinced. They already called it, right? They're like, no, that's Cowboys ball. And then they had to go through commercial replaying it, and then they've realized, oh, yeah, it's really the Chargers' ball because it was a guy who got pushed in to Tolbert. Tolbert got pushed into Turpin. And so that makes it eligible. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that it was interference, which is what they assumed.
So was that the initial call? Because I never saw a flag thrown. I had it on mute at that when the official
who was pointing as Cowboys ball assumed that there was interference.
Yeah, but he never threw a flag, right?
That's a good point.
I was confused about that too.
Oh wait, there's more that the refs messed up. So Dallas matriculates now. By the way, Chargers end up scoring on that 17-17. By the way, 4th-and-goal at the 1, 6'6", 240-pound Justin Herbert was in shotgun. They threw it to Gerald Everett for a 1-yard score. 17-17, 7-11 left. So Dallas gets downfield. Then the refs mess up a Chargers challenge. Then the umpire almost gets trampled when the ball snapped, but he's in there trying to allow for a substitution on the defense. Oh, that was fun.
Yep. Yeah, watching that replay was a lot scarier.
Yeah.
There was like a guard pulling, and you're like, oh my God, little guy, get out of there.
Get trampled. End up with the Cowboys end up with a 3rd-and-10 at the Chargers 21 after the Chargers used all their timeouts. So then Dak, this is 3rd-and-10, right? All they have to do, if they get the first down, the game is effectively over because the Chargers are out of timeouts. And I get it, the defense has something to do with this too. But instead of trying to get the first down, Dak goes in the end zone to Pollard, incomplete. They settle for an Aubrey 39-yard field goal, 20-17 Dallas, 2:19 left. So that's also a strategic error. And again, allowing for the fact that defense might be like lined up trying to prevent a first down. Maybe that's the play because we don't have all 22. But your play ought to be to try to get the first down, not the touchdown there.
Yeah, or make that throw.
There's also that.
Make that throw.
So the Chargers down 3 now. First down. Herbert goes to Keenan Allen, who loses his bearings. Do you remember? He catches the ball. He sort of spins, and he's out of bounds. And he kind of slams the ball in his hand. He's like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Then, by the way, it didn't matter anyway because Dallas was offside. Then second down, sacked by Parsons. Third down, picked by Gilmore. Ball game. And a nice little tribute by the Cowboys. I don't know if you noticed this. While in victory formation, they honored the Tom Landry Cowboys with their offensive line shift that they did throughout my entire childhood. Anyway, Cowboys win this game. McCarthy, the Chargers, it's just you cannot – there's not enough time to go through all of the gas. Scott Kazmar putting this now, this week of the NFL, in context for us after this game, the Cowboys won 20-17. For only the second time since 1994, nine teams won in the NFL this week without scoring 21 points. That's the whole salary cap era. That was this week in the National Football League. And by the way, everybody betting sort of rampant blanket unders at this point. But I just want to point out one other thing. And maybe I should give this more time. But, you know, in our heads, we're all like, Justin Herbert is really, really good at football. And Tua Tagovailoa got so much incoming the last few years. Here's just one data point, and I get it. It's a game that's dependent on teammates. But their career records now, including the postseason, Justin Herbert is 27-28 all time. 27-28 all time. Tua Tagovailoa is, do we have that handy? We do not. I will call it up right here. Tua Tagovailoa lifetime is 26-14. And so I just want to throw this out there because Herbert missed some big plays yesterday. And can we throw the Ed Werder tweet up real quick? Because this also puts it in context for Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert, this per Ed Werder. That's Stephon Gilmore clinching interception. No, Justin Herbert threw his 13th career interception in the fourth quarter of a one-score game tonight. That's five more than any other quarterback in the NFL since entering the league in 2020. Am I saying that Justin Herbert is no good at football? Of course not. But am I saying that maybe he shoulders some of this blame and it's not all Brandon Staley? I am. And it's time we kind of accept that. We'll come back. Drew Dinsick on the NFL on the other side. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
With all four major sports in action, and that will be the case when the NBA gets here, there's no better time of year to be a sports bettor. With our new Sports Equinox special, there's no better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Sign up now, get a full VSiN Pro access to everything we do through May 1st for only $120, including daily best bets, unlimited access to our betting splits, plus all our exclusive betting content for the MLB playoffs, college football, the rest of the NFL season, March Madness, the NBA and NHL regular seasons, and the NFL draft. Don't miss this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up now. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. This is from DQ Mike from Buffalo. Who gets home field in a World Series between the Rangers and the Phillies? I'm glad you asked. You asked. That would be the Rangers. They both finish with the same regular season record. Am I correct about that? Doop-a-doop-a-doo. Yes. But by virtue of the very first series of the entire year, Texas swept Philly. So Texas would get home field. We are literally...
Go back to the first series of the year.
This is... We talked about this earlier in the week.
Yeah.
Like, it is so absolutely ridiculous that we go all the way back to March. March 30th, where Texas began a three-game sweep of Philly. That would determine it. So, there's that. This is from... Let's see. Eddie Vegan Runner. Love the new Kelly movie review segment. Armageddon.
Oh, you know, yeah.
A little earlier.
A little Aerosmith going, you got
to
bring it up.
Podiatron, matriculate over under is still 4, and then he changes it to 3.5 because apparently I went under. And then Titans Insider says, not sure how you just managed to go through the whole dissertation of the Monday Night Football game and not mention the most insane part of the whole evening, that Chargers, that young lady Chargers fan
who
was wearing the Herbert jersey, who was just going crazy. It's just absolutely pure ecstasy when the Chargers scored and then agony of defeat when they lost.
Great job by the production team on that because do you ever watch a game and you see a fan like that and you're like, I wish I could see them again. Like that, they're losing it, you know, positive or negatively one way or the other. And you want to see them again, but they never go back to it.
Just because I can't tap into that emotion. Like, you ever see that old Michael Jackson concert footage when people were losing their minds and, like, Charlie Brown tears were coming out? I was like, what is that emotion? I've got to get to that some point on something.
Plus, like, that's obviously the greatest Chargers fan on the planet. Like,
yes, exactly. Not known for their fan base, necessarily. All right, real quick before we get to Drew. Drew Dinsick standing by. What was that exchange you heard on ESPN this morning?
It was on First Take. They were having the discussion about that end of first half with McCarthy.
Yeah.
And they were kind of supporting, I guess, the decision to just play for points there because of what we had seen all weekend in the NFL and end of half scenarios not playing out well. And it was, I don't know, it was something to hear. Where I think it was really just McCarthy not trusting his quarterback were offense enough to try to take advantage and get a touchdown there before the half.
There's no justification.
There's
for
not.
It. And I just wanted to follow up on what I was saying at the end of the segment there, too, because people were going to be like, oh, my God, you think Tua is better than Justin Herbert? I don't. What I'm trying to say is that we come to conclusions very hastily about players in multiple sports, by the way. When I say hastily, I mean we don't give it nearly enough time. Does that mean that Tua is better than Justin Herbert? It does not. In fact, I'm the guy who has the Tyreek Hill MVP ticket because when I look at Tua's stats, what I can tell you is that Tyreek Hill has 43.3% of Tua's yards and 42.8% of Tua's touchdowns thus far this year. I actually believe Tyreek Hill is the MVP. But I just wanted to make that point about the fact that people like to kill Brandon Staley. It ain't all Brandon Staley. He's not the guy out there throwing the football, making, you know, missing open receivers or perhaps throwing poor interceptions late. And you are a product of the team you're with. That's, like I said it all the time again, the Peyton Manning, if he had been drafted by Washington thing that I always talk about. So it's a little more complicated than that. But I just want to say this. That talk we had with Aaron Schatz, I don't usually, we do tons of interviews on this show. They don't usually linger with me. But that first segment we did with Aaron Schatz last week where we talked specifically, he's an MVP voter. He's one of, pardon me, he's one of 50. So he's 2% of the entire pool. He just refuses. He gave a good reason why. He will not vote for a non-quarterback for this. And so it's going to be fascinating. Who does he think really is the MVP at this point this year? But it was interesting because if I had just quoted him those stats, he still would have come back. Nope, Tua's the guy then. Tua's still the MVP. I'm curious what Drew Dinsick thinks about that. He is the host of not one but two podcasts, Deep Dive, which he does with Andy Molitor, of course, and then NBC Sports Bet the Edge. You can follow him on Twitter at @whale_capper. I didn't plan on talking to you about this, but I'm curious. If you had an MVP vote, Drew, who is it right now for you?
It's Pat Mahomes, and it's pretty... It's pretty uninspiring to even really kind of make this case because I just don't think that anyone has done enough to take the crown away from him so far this season. Mahomes' numbers, you know, considering what he's been, and I guess maybe this goes to a broader point where I'm just a little frustrated with the quality of the play in the NFL and it feels like, you know, they have done this to themselves because you had a player like Tyreek Hill with Pat Mahomes. And in the sake of fairness and spreading the wins around, you divorced those two players. And now Tyreek Hill is making Tua look like he's in the conversation with Pat Mahomes for the best quarterback. And he's not.
He's not.
He is not.
He's not.
He is not.
Yeah.
And so and this is not even really to denigrate Tua. Like, if you want to make the case that he's top five, I'll listen to you. You want to kind of pull out like your entire arguments. I'm still going to tell you that I am concerned about his availability. Yet to play 17 games in a season, yet to play 16 games in a season. And, you know, I think that if he could make it through this entire season in full health, that's a huge step forward. And I want more good young quarterbacks in this league. But, you know, I don't think anyone really can hold a candle right now to Mahomes and what he's done throughout his career and to this point in the season with the cast of characters that's been injured and or just developing very slowly. And I think the fact that they're winning in spite of that, you see some of it may be scheduled, you know, schedule related and who they've had to face so far. But for me, it's basically this is Mahomes and then somebody's going to have to come take it from him. And right now you're not seeing enough consistent quality play from the quarterback position across the league to warrant any other consideration here. I know Tua is the current favorite. You know, Tua's coming off back-to-back games against the Giants and the Panthers. Congratulations. Everybody thinks you're amazing. Like, there's a case to be made against Tua because he hasn't banked enough of an EPA advantage over Mahomes to this point, despite the fact that you've already seen two of his best games that he's going to have all season, you know, just in terms of their offensive output, you know, against the Broncos and against the Giants. So it's it's still Mahomes to lose, and I think anyone at the end of the season is going to have a tough time given, you know, the just the clear quality difference in his play versus the field that anyone's going to literally say, yeah, no, this is the best player in the NFL right now over Pat Mahomes.
Yeah, what I was trying to get to is there's just so much nuance in all of this. By the way, just for thoroughness' sake, Tua is the short shot, plus 350 at DraftKings. Patrick Mahomes is plus 450. Josh Allen, 7-1. Jalen Hurts, after his performance this past week, plus 750. And then Brock Purdy begins the double-digit crowd at 11-1. It's going to be really fascinating how they deal with MVP, how they deal with Offensive Player of the Year this year as well. What about Offensive Rookie of the Year? Who's that right now? Because for those of us who are holding Puka Nacua tickets, Puka Nacua is still tied for the league lead in receptions, and it feels like his head coach and his quarterback and their buddy Cooper Kupp have actively phased him out. That's how it feels. And yet he's still tied for the lead league in receptions. It's got to be CJ Stroud as the main guy here, right, at this point?
Yeah, and I think there's kind of a stranglehold on almost every award, which is wild. Coach of the Year may be the exception, but yeah, CJ Stroud right now is pretty clearly your Offensive Rookie of the Year. Because he's winning games as a rookie quarterback, because he's not making the key mistakes, he's not taking sacks, he's not throwing picks, his numbers at the end of the year are going to be pretty outstanding relative to the other rookie quarterbacks. So it's going to be tough to beat him, even if you do have, any type of generational, stat line from a guy like a rookie wide receiver like Puka Nacua. It's still going to be tough to run down a quarterback who's playing as well as Stroud is. So I get it why he's minus 135, and I'm not really don't have an appetite to attack him in that market. Yeah. Tyreek Hill, same sort of story. The only guy I could see running down Tyreek Hill is Ja'Marr Chase, and Ja'Marr Chase is on bye this week, so there's really no emergency at all to go run into the Offensive Player of the Year market. Tyreek Hill going up against a beaten up secondary in Philly this week should be able to continue to put together his performance. But I think it's worth noting, like, Tyreek Hill is on pace for the all-time record, right? He's getting 135 yards a game to this point of the season through the good portion of the weather, with a healthy quarterback, against some of their weaker competition. Like, he's going to have to average over his career high to get the yardage record from Calvin Johnson this season, which to me, I think there is a path for somebody to run him down, just because the bar has been set that if he doesn't set that record, I think people are going to make the case for another player.
But this is my point. Tyreek on pace for 2,300 yards. No one's ever gotten 2,000. If Tua gets 5,000 yards passing, 15 others have done that. That's not an MVP, Tyreek. We'll come back. More with Drew next, Week 7.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, Kelly, we got to take a break and talk about Zyn nicotine pouches. We're always debating what a team needs to do to get to number one, but Zyn nicotine pouches are already there. It's helped millions of people achieve lasting change, earning the title of America's number one nicotine pouch. Now, if you're a smoker or dipper looking to ditch the ashtray or spit cup, look no further than Zyn. Zyn's made with six simple ingredients and is available in a wide range of varieties, including spearmint, citrus, and even coffee. Bill 80 swears by wintergreen, as we like to say. And it's available in two strengths, so you can control your nicotine satisfaction. Because it's discreet, you can enjoy it anywhere, anytime, so you have never really needing a moment to miss in all of this. Let me say that otherwise. Anytime, so you never have to miss a moment of the game, for instance, if you're watching that. Plus, every can of Zyn earns you points towards premium items like tailgating gear, top-of-the-line tech, Zyn swag, and even gift cards. Find your Zyn at your local convenience store or online at Zyn.com. That's ZYN.com. A warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Tim Thompson, great analysis of last night's game. Two franchises that have squandered talent with horrible coaching in the last 10 to 20 years. The call on the punt was not interference, but that refs thought it touched the Chargers first, which means Dallas can fumble and not be a touchdown.
Yeah,
option. It was one of those two
but
things.
It was very definitive.
Yeah. Kevin Ryan, Gil, Buck and Aikman must have said the word analytics 10 times last night. Where's the analytic talk about teams bringing the kickoff back? That, to me, is the most glaring mistake any NFL team can make during a game. I take the ball at the 25 100% of the time. I will say this about, there was the London game, the Tottenham game, where at the end of the first half, like, why wasn't the Titans return man coached not to even touch the football. There's nothing good that can happen there. Led to a Ravens field goal, if you recall, on the muff. Michael Burns, Kelly sounds spry today. Must have taken the Epsom salt soak. There is a conspiracy. This is also from PJ. There's a conspiracy about the Chargers fan saying she was an NFL plant to try and raise their fan base. It is odd they had a perfect angle and kept coming back to her. New York Mets 16. Maybe they showed the young lady going crazy because she was the only Chargers fan at SoFi. And Bruce Dobigan playing a little game called What Job Would an NFL Coach Have If Not Coaching? I'll start with Mike McCarthy, Jiffy Lube manager, he says. No offense to Jiffy Lube managers. I'm sure they do a fine job, and it's a big business to run. Drew Dinsick, at Whale underscore Capper, both the Deep Dive and Bet the Edge podcast from NBC Sports, joins us once again. So, Drew, on a weekend, week six, Scott Kazmar was tweeting earlier that nine teams won with fewer than 21 points. Nine teams won with fewer than 21 points. I mean, that is, and again, he put it sort of in historical context for us, which is, you know, which is that that's the whole salary cap era. That's from 1994. That hasn't happened. Second time since 1994. What did you learn most from week six, and what have you bet in week seven?
Yeah, I mean, there's been some wild anomalies all year. Like, I think week four, you had seven teams that didn't score an offensive touchdown. Like, these are wild, weird, outlier type of bad offensive performances you're getting from these teams so far.
Is there a reason? Is there a reason for that, by the way? Do you attribute it to just not taking preseason seriously? Like, what's the reason?
That's a good question, and I don't have all of the answers. My understanding or my assumption is that defenses are just ahead of offense right now in terms of how to scheme effectively for the type of quarterback play and the type of skill position players that are available right now. You know, there was a pretty significant wave and shift of defensive style of play in the wake of Pat Mahomes just burning every team over the top, where now teams are playing with more defensive backs on the field, and they've now pivoted from more defensive backs on the field to having one of those guys that is especially good at run fit. And so base defense has kind of shifted away from, you know, any type of, you know, extra off ball linebackers, which are kind of useless in today's game. So, it's been pretty clear, at least, that defenses and the way that they're trying to defend the current state of the NFL is making it tougher for teams to perform well in the red zone, making it tougher for them to have explosive plays. And I think for those reasons, you're seeing a lot more of these sort of chess matches decided by field goal type of games. And, I don't know that we've seen anyone really solve that style of defensive, personnel, at least not effectively. We've seen a bunch of teams try to come up with innovative ways to make life harder on them. The more successful offenses so far this season seem to be teams that are pivoting into heavier personnel packages, having two tight ends on the field. But if one or both of those tight ends aren't, real threats to catch the pass, then I think you're pretty clearly telegraphing you're going to run, and then defenses, you're somewhat predictable. So it's kind of a mix, I think, of we had a huge amount of turnover in offensive coordinators in the offseason. It wasn't talked about a lot, but there was something like 12 or 18 new offensive coordinators combined with, five new quarterbacks. And by the way, we have a wave of, three rookies that started week one, combined with three guys who had made hardly any starts in their career, four if you want to include Kenny Pickett. And so you basically had, a third of the league with brand new quarterback play, half of the league with brand new offensive coordinators. Oh, and by the way, defenses right now are ahead of offense in general. So I think all kind of stewing to make a little bit more of a defensive product to start the season. And, it's not going to change or get better anytime soon. I'm losing count now, 8 quarterback injuries.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean,
look forward to that, boys and girls. Yeah.
Yeah. You want to have fun? Do a little thought exercise. What should be the total in a game between Aiden O'Connell and Tyson Bagent? What's a fair total there, guys? Because I don't know the answer.
Wow.
I mean, like, there's realistically below 50th percentile quarterback play across almost half of the teams that are going to suit up this Sunday. And the Sunday, this week is going to be even tougher because you have 6 teams on bye. And, these are the dog days of the NFL season, particularly with what's going on with the injuries.
On guessing lines yesterday, the first 3 games, we didn't know 5 of the 6 quarterbacks that would be playing.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay. So obviously the betting market is drifting now with lower totals. Did you get ahead of any of those this week?
No, I'm pretty much out of the totals game for right now. I think we're kind of settling right around where they ought to be. The average total for so far this season has been 44. The average actual points scored is about 43.5. So there's not a huge mean difference in terms of what the production has been in the totals. That said, unders are hitting at a 61% clip so far. I think that's, you know, just in general, the median is missing the closing total by about a point and a half. So, as you look across the board this week, and, you know, I haven't gone through the weather carefully to really kind of help buttress this, but, the numbers look like they're starting to get pretty close to, you know, what the current state of scoring is in the NFL, which is you want to be on the lower side of 43.
What did you bet so far?
I have a number of sides in the accounts, and so far the only reason that I'm on any of these is the adjustment between what I expected, with any kind of weight on a preseason prior and what is actually open right now is impossible to square. Good example is Patriots at 8.5 against the Bills. This reflects somewhere in the ballpark of a 6-point adjustment off of the preseason priors for these teams. And the Patriots, while they have not performed to the level that was expected, they have played a very tough schedule and, you know, are at least healthier than the Bills. So I'm not sure 6 points there was warranted. And I think outside of a touchdown, I like the Patriots. Similarly, the Vikings at +7 against the Niners is a huge, huge, huge number. The Vikings are playing much better than their record so far this season. This preseason look ahead was San Francisco -1. So we've adjusted this one 6 points. And again, San Francisco is not coming in at a perfect state of health by any stretch of the imagination. Trent Williams, Debo Samuel, and Christian McCaffrey are all guys that matter for that offense, and they all went out in that game against the Browns, and now they have another road game with an extra day to get right. But you read some of the quotes and some of the conversation around Shanahan, and it's pretty clear that they are not just planning for this Vikings game this week, but also for the Bengals game the following week, because they have a short week to prepare for that one. So a little bit of potential that San Francisco just tries to go in and get an ugly win and get out of town. So 7 points in pocket feels pretty good. Denver Broncos defense is getting a lot healthier. Green Bay Packers haven't done anything to really warrant a 4-point adjustment to the good relative to their preseason prior. So I like the Broncos money line at +100. This is again, yeah, we expected to see something like Broncos -3.5 based on the preseason priors. And
-1. Yeah, I was totally surprised the Packers were a favorite yesterday on guessing lines. And I'm no Broncos fan. I'm no Sean Payton fan, but I was surprised by that.
Yeah, I mean, if Aaron Jones is good to go and he's 100%, then this is probably going to be a pretty competitive game and Packers may win. But Broncos defense getting healthier matters, I think. And they're not... this is still not a great situation for the Packers to go in his favorites, in my opinion. Jordan Love is performing really, really poorly this season. I don't know really what to make of that.
Real quick, yes or no, do you like that Kyle Shanahan and the Niners went back to Santa Clara between the Cleveland and Minnesota games?
I think it was the right call. Okay. The fact that the Minnesota game is on Monday night and you're not going to get a time advantage by acclimating to Coast, Central Time, whatever. That makes sense to me to go back. And yeah, the fact that they got to play at Cincinnati on a short week after and they want their guys in their beds, all that checks out.
Thank you, Drew. Baseball with Paul Sporer next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, don't forget on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 to bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and see the promo code or use the promo code VEGAS when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Once again, that promo code is VEGAS. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. A little Backstreet Boys happening right now, by the way, Kelly. I'm going to point that out. Paul M., I would think if Raheem Mostert runs for over 1,000 yards and has the most touchdowns, I would think he has a very good chance to win the Offensive Player of the Year. Yeah, I don't know about that. I think he has a teammate in Tyreek Hill that has a better chance at Offensive Player of the Year than he does.
Yeah, and I think a lot of these awards you're talking about, some of these Dolphins might end up tearing votes away from each other.
That's very true. That's possible too. I will take issue with one thing that Drew said in that previous segment, where he was like, he thinks most of these awards markets are, you know, there's a rightful favorite, or I don't want to misquote him, but I'm paraphrasing, that he thought that, you know, there's a definite favorite in all of them. I would say for Offensive Rookie of the Year and C.J. Stroud, I would agree, and this is a guy with a Puka ticket, I would agree that C.J. Stroud is the rightful favorite there because he's a quarterback. But all the others, I think, are way up for grabs at this point. Jesse Welch, interesting that you keep drawing back to the Aaron Schatz interview saying he wouldn't vote non-quarterback for MVP. While he was on air, I was actually encouraged by him saying things like yet and so far. It made me feel like he could still be open-minded. I hear what you're saying, Jesse. The only problem with that is now you get to vote 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And so my takeaway from that was he would be willing to put Tyreek or McCaffrey, if he were healthy, into his 2, 3, 4, or 5.
Yeah.
But for 1, he still wouldn't do it. So I don't know.
I hate the top 5 vote thing. Like, especially when you're talking
you
MVP.
It. Yeah.
Just send in one. Who's your most valuable player?
That's how they used to do it.
I mean, we've seen it happen too many times recently in awards. WNBA MVP. A couple of the NBA awards were impacted by that, where it was the leading first place vote getter did not get the award.
One more. Ricky Shepard. Gil Todd. Oh, he sent this to Wishnev, too. Did you notice the lack of replays on any big Chargers penalties on Dallas key plays? 3rd and 18 in the fourth quarter. Holding where? No replays. 3rd and 1 midfield. Chargers had an eligible man downfield on a 2-yard slant. Is that even possible? Seems fishy to me. By the way, there was a hold that was on a real quick play, too. I keep getting back to that Eagles touchdown at the end of the 19-play drive. Sean Villan, Pennsylvania, and I were having an exchange yesterday about it. He was like, oh, I saw a definitive replay, and he showed me the replay. And I'm like, that's the replay they showed all day Sunday. I don't think that's definitive, where they're showing it from the back of the end zone, and they're showing Hurts, you know, reach over the goal line. I'm like, we don't know if his knee is down at that point. So anyway, it's the eye of the beholder.
I like that you have so much trouble with that one, because that's the you know, like we always talk about, like, the things that you know were a catch or a touchdown, just that you know. But you don't have visual evidence from the NFL.
Watch the actual broadcast angle. It doesn't look like he's anywhere close
to
scoring.
That guy's in the end zone. He's in the end zone by like a foot.
Stop it. They're still using replays from the future to win the Super Bowl. Paul Sporer joins us now, everybody, from FanGraphs, Sleeper in the Bus podcast. Talk some baseball. How you doing, Paulie?
I'm doing very well. How are you, Gil?
I'm doing well. Okay. Wild card round, 4 sweeps. Division round, 2 sweeps, and then 2 games where the loser ended up winning 1 game. Atlanta on this amazing comeback, and Minnesota managed to scratch together a win. Now we have a 2-0 Rangers lead, and obviously a 1-0 Phillies lead in the championship series after last night. Are we going to get a competitive series? And by competitive, I mean someone going to win, one of the losing teams going to win 2 games in either of these series?
I can't count out Houston. I know they you know, lost home field advantage there by dropping both at home, but it's one of those teams, you know, they're so battle tested and all that. I'm just not sure that they're really flinching off of that. Especially if you're going to talk about baseball home field advantage in general, obviously not the biggest thing, but also, like, they're driving up the road 3 hours,
yeah,
right? So
true that.
Going on the road is not exactly going all the way to the East Coast to face a Boston or New York in a hostile environment. Dallas will be rocking, don't get me wrong, but it'll be having plenty of Astros fans too. So I can't write them off. This Philly team, I slept on them again this year, Gil. I don't know what it's going to take for me to learn. But yeah, they're a force, and they're really, really impressive. You know, the Wheeler-Nola 1-2 punch. I know Nola wasn't super AC during the year, but you get him in October. You got to love that. That lineup just keeps coming at you.
It's
got
amazing.
Guys like Castellanos playing his best ball right now at the perfect time. I love these baby snakes. We've been talking about them all the way back in February, you and I. But I'm not sure that they're going to mount the comeback with this Philly juggernaut. Between the two, I like Houston more to make the comeback and at least give us a series. We need one, though, because, like, these playoffs, I'm sorry, they've just been boring. If you're the teams, people that are rooting for the winning teams, Philly fans, like, this is not boring. Texas fans, I get it.
Yeah.
But the rest of us neutral viewers, boring as hell.
No, it's true. I have an exact. I have Phillies over the Astros, which has taken a couple haymakers here in this series so far, and I've got like a standing eight count against me. So it remains interesting. But you're right. Like, we got to get one competitive series in there. So let me just put that in betting terms. So the Diamondbacks plus 275 to come back from a 1-0 deficit in this series. You said you don't like that, is what I'm getting. Astros plus 360 down 2-0.
Oh yeah.
Would you bet that?
I'm taking the way better price there. Yeah, I think I am jumping on the Astros there. If I'm going to jump on either, yeah.
Well, they're down two. And the Rangers, they're down two, and the Diamondbacks are down
true.
One. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. I guess. Yeah, actually, only one. The extra game there only gets you a bit more. I still prefer Houston. Again, I just don't think that they're that hit by losing both at home because, again, they're driving up the road 3 hours.
Yeah. Bruce Bochy has won 3 World Series. I don't know if you're aware of that.
He
did that in San Francisco, and so far be it from anyone to question anything he does. By the way, great job keeping Eovaldi in yesterday. The big moment of that game really was when it was 5-2 and the Astros loaded the bases with nobody out in the fifth. And Bochy was like, you get it done, Eovaldi. And he did. Strikeout. And then he induced Bregman to ground out to escape the jam. Is Scherzer a mistake in game 3? How do you read that?
No, I mean, I think you got to trust the team to kind of know where their guy's at. With a 2-0 lead, I think you can really take the chance with it too. If they're down 2-0, maybe you got to go something a bit more stable. Somebody that you know, quote unquote, can give you 4 innings at least, because you never know, obviously. That's why I put no in quotes. But with Scherzer, that's one of those guys that I'm going to trust. If the doctors are signing off on him to go, then absolutely it's the right move. But with the 2-0 lead, I think it's almost a no-risk move.
That's tomorrow, where Scherzer is a minus 130 favorite against Christian Javier and the Houston Astros. Real quick about yesterday before we go on to the Phillies game tonight, but Valdez, I get it, 4 hits within the first 10 pitches. But that throwing error really bothered me in the moment where I was just like, he just didn't feel like, I don't get the sense of concentration, but I don't know what I'm talking about. I just sort of got that instinct about it. But then after the game, I heard, or after the second game last night, Pedro laid in on him about that too. He goes, it's not the stuff with Valdez. It's just the fact that he's not fully engaged at all moments. Do you believe that?
It's certainly how it looks. It looks like pretty casual, just kind of rifling it over there. But this is something that sometimes guys that, you know, don't show things the right way that we get after. Robinson Cano faced a lot of this, and obviously he had his own issues with all the PED stuff, but like, you know, his defense would get criticized for being quote unquote lackadaisical. I see what everyone else is seeing with the Fromber play there, but I don't think it's a overarching issue with him. I think that was just a bad throw. It didn't look like he was fully concentrated on it, and we saw the result of the throw, right? If anything, it should teach young pitchers, kids watching, like, hey, make sure you concentrate on those quote-unquote easy throws, because you throw it away and all of a sudden the floodgates can open on you. So I don't want to make too much of it. Fromber's been an absolute dude for them, so let's not take one bad game and actually really one snowball inning and extrapolate too far with it.
All right, tonight, game 2 back in Philly, Aaron Nola against Merrill Kelly. And once again, Philly's not a negligible favorite, minus 165, D-backs plus 145 if you have the 20-cent line. Minus 155 we're showing here on the dime line on the Phillies. What do you like tonight?
As I was just saying earlier, you know, I've slept on this Philly team again coming into the playoffs. I don't think I'm going to make that same mistake here. I think that's where I'm going to lean tonight. With them being at home again, Nola, again, pitching some of his best baseball at the most important time. We talked about how his ERA was a bit high this year. Is he going to be a true ace in the playoffs for them? So far, absolutely yes. Now, Merrill Kelly did get a big monkey off his back by beating the Dodgers in the playoffs. That was a team that he's just consistently struggled with, even in the great year that he had this year. So I think he's game to step up and have a nice outing here. But if I'm going anywhere, I'm leaning with Philly. I will say, if you're on the D-backs or you want to be on them tonight, you got to be pleased with their fight yesterday. So I can see getting there, but it's Phillies, man. They're a buzzsaw right now.
Yeah, Phillies are a buzzsaw. It's going to be hard to beat this team the way they're playing baseball. Just relentless offense, and the pitching has been phenomenal. Kimbrel could be a problem late in one of these games.
True.
We'll see. Paul, appreciate it. Enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks, Gil. Take care.
Paul Sporer, at Sporer, S-P-O-R-E-R. on Twitter. Kelly's got some college football guessing lines. Next, Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.